It may be well to point up what we have just said by a bit of financial history, especially since there is more than one moral to be drawn from it. In the climactic year 1929, John J. Raskob, a most important figure nationally as well as on Wall Street, extolled the blessings of capitalism in an article in the Ladies' Home Journal entitled, "Everybody Ought to Be Rich." His thesis was that savings of only $15 per month invested in good common stocks with dividends reinvested would produce an estate of $80,000 in 20 years against total contributions of only $3,600. If the General Motors tycoon was right, this was indeed a simple road to riches. How nearly right was he? Our rough calculation, based on assumed investment in the 30 stocks making up the Dow Jones Industrial Average, or the DJIA, indicates that if Raskob's prescription had been followed during 1929 through 1948, the investors' holdings at the beginning of 1949 would have been worth about $8,500. This is a far cry from the great man's promise of $80,000, and it shows how little reliance can be placed on such optimistic forecasts and assurances. But, as an aside, we should remark that the return actually realized by the 20-year operation would have been better than 8% compounded annually, and this despite the fact that the investor would have begun his purchases with the DJIA at 300 and ended with a valuation based on the 1948 closing level of 177. This record may be regarded as a persuasive argument for the principle of regular monthly purchases of strong common stocks through thick and thin, a program known as dollar-cost averaging. Since our tape is not addressed to speculators, it is not meant for those who trade in the market. Most of these people are guided by charts or other largely mechanical means of determining the right moments to buy and sell. The one principle that applies to nearly all these so-called technical approaches is that one should buy because a stock or the market has gone up, and one should sell because it has declined. This is the exact opposite of sound business sense everywhere else, and it is most unlikely that it can lead to lasting success in Wall Street. In our own stock market experience and observation, extending over 50 years, we have not known a single person who has consistently or lastingly made money by thus following the market. We do not hesitate to declare that this approach is as fallacious as it is popular. Since its first publication in 1949, revisions of The Intelligent Investor have appeared at intervals of approximately 5 years. In updating the current version, we shall have to deal with quite a number of new developments since the 1965 edition was written. The underlying principles of sound investment should not alter from decade to decade, but the application of these principles must be adapted to significant changes in the financial mechanisms and climate. We have not allowed these fluctuations to affect our general attitude towards sound investment policy, which remains substantially unchanged since 1949. The extent of the market shrinkage in 1969 and 1970 should have served to dispel an illusion that had been gaining ground during the past two decades. This was that leading common stocks could be bought at any time, at any price, with the assurance not only of ultimate profit, but also that any intervening loss would soon be recouped by a renewed advance of the market to new high levels. That was too good to be true. At long last, the stock market has returned to normal, in the sense that both speculators and stock investors must again be prepared to experience significant and perhaps protracted falls as well as rises in the value of their holdings. In the area of many secondary and third-line common stocks, especially recently floated enterprises, the havoc wrought by the last market break was catastrophic. This was nothing new in itself. It had happened to a similar degree in 1961-1962. But there was now a novel element in the fact that some of the investment funds had large commitments in highly speculative and obviously overvalued issues of this type. Evidently, it is not only the tyro who needs to be warned that while enthusiasm may be necessary for great accomplishments elsewhere, in Wall Street, it almost invariably leads to disaster. The major question we shall have to deal with grows out of the huge rise in the rate of interest on first quality bonds. Since late 1967, the investor has been able to obtain more than twice as much income from such bonds